Good morning, brewers. Welcome to another episode of the Commander and Coffee Podcast. I'm Cypher.
And I'm Cork.
My name is Y. How's it going?
And we're here back again to talk about another sweet new CDH/EDH deck tech. This episode and the next couple episodes following are going to focus primarily on Dominaria United, as that set has just dropped. We're super excited to check out all the new cards and see what the new spaces are. And this episode is going to be the first of several new deck techs or new commanders. So I'm really excited to show that and kind of dig into it. But before we get into that, we got some upkeep to take care of. So, guys, what are you guys working on? What's been going on since last we met?
Hunt City. I think that's the big one, right?
That was a big one.
So, feel like people would have known by now, we did not make top 16. Very sad. One of our friends did qualify with Najila deck. We're super proud of him because I think that was his first, like, that was his biggest tournament he was part of. So I was really rooting for him. He made the tiebreakers going, I believe, 3-3. So great showing. Congrats to you, CJ.
Yeah, great showing. Nice to see a local go the distance.
I feel like I had a really great tournament. I was on Curious Control, and I finished with a record of 2-4. I got there in round 6. I had relevant game actions in every game with the deck, and I went from not being on the deck at all for about 2 years to wanting to run it back in a smaller event next week. So it's been a really great experience for me playing a 4-color deck for the first time in a long while.
Very cool, very cool. What about you, Cork?
Been brewing a lot. I'm working on red-green girls of the deck for right now. I also attended Punt City, and I played a different type of Najila deck and got to meet some really awesome people, and we spoke about the truth. And made some good friends going forward. I look forward to working with them.
Yeah, tell us more about your flavor of Najila, because I think it's something that isn't the first one that people think of when they think of Najila, but I think, I'm going to say that word a lot, I think more people should be thinking about your version.
Nah, I'm good.
Fine, keep it in your back pocket, I gotcha.
I did also attend Punt City. I played Roger Silas. Deck felt great. As per the name of the event, I had at least one that I definitely know of, Punt. In my games, that was unfortunate, but otherwise, deck felt good, deck felt strong. It was great to be back in the tournament scene again. I forgot, since COVID happened, how exhausting playing, you know, a bunch of rounds of Magic is. I will say, though, that I did like the way the event was run. It was nice to be done at, like, 5. I mean, I was still emotionally drained at 5, but, you know, I'm used to these SCG tours and all, and these GPs and everything. You know, you run until, like, 9, 10 usually, so it was really nice that the day one wrapped up at like a normal time and everything like that, since I'm moving into old man status. So that was really cool today to see. So other than that, I took a bit of a break from Magic for the week. I had a lot of personal life stuff to do moving into wedding season for me. So it's just been super busy trying to get all that situated and worked out. So just been taking a break, brewing some fun stuff. You know, we worked on the deck today we're going to talk about, and I've been playing a lot with Vadrick again. I think I got some sweet improves to that. So if you were excited about that deck and want to see kind of where I've been at with it, you can definitely check out the Moxfield there, and it'll have all my updates to it and stuff. So really excited to just kind of play like a little more casual, a little more fun decks for the while I kind of work through all my real life crap that gets in the way of Magic.
You deserve to talk about your Seeker victory at Punt City, though. Tell everyone about the sick pickups you found at the vendors.
Oh yeah, I like killed it at Enders. I got I'm filling out my deck. As you guys know, I'm a big Bling fan. So my German Final Fortune was hot. I got a Japanese original foil Tainted Pact, and I got an original I believe it's Marcadian Masks Dark Ritual, the good one, as for those that are fans of the Ritual are concerned. So overall, it was a pretty great weekend from acquiring cards. So can't complain about that.
Mine was less cool. I have never owned a Training Grounds. I've always borrowed it for as long as I've been on Curious Control. And I won the Pauper Side event. That was cool. And the payout was exactly the vendor cost of a Judge promo Training Grounds. So I got an unexpected upgrade.
I got an NFC Druids Repository. That was cool with a Temporal Mastery showing.
Yeah, I think it was sick. You were like hunting for that card for like weeks, and then you're like, do you have a Druids Repository? And they're like, we have this one. And you're like, yes, give it to me.
That person could have literally said any amount of money, and I was throwing it at him. I was lucky
sure,
that
he... I'm pretty sure you like whipped your wallet at his head, but you know.
I pretty much kind of threw my card at him, and he's like, I only take PayPal. And I went, all right, hold on. Give me that back.
I cannot pitch a URL at you, sir.
I mean, I sure can try.
But anyways, it was a great time at Pun City. Definitely, I think I speak for all of us when I say we're looking forward to future endeavors, future events coming up down the line. I think this year there's one more, Oktoberfest. I know I'm not going, but I think Cork, I know you. I think you're in, and I don't know why if you're going to that one.
Depends on budget. I would love to go. I had such a great time at Pun City, and I will if I can.
Yeah, and I mean, last but not least, a huge shout out to Eminence Gaming. You guys are awesome. You guys ran an amazing tournament, and keep on keeping on. Do your thing, guys. Thank you for everything.
Let's get into Coffee of the Week. Let's see what we are drinking. Who's doing Coffee of the Week this week?
It was my turn to brew the coffee, and I intentionally left it a mystery. So, Cork, I would like you to tell me your thoughts on what you just had.
It tastes good, number one. it has a little bit of a deeper, oakier flavor to it. Definitely a dark roast, which I do appreciate the most because I love black coffee, and it just harkens back to everything black coffee that it should be and will forever be. But it also has like a fruity overtone to it, too, right at the end.
Cool. So with that in mind, the reason I chose what I chose today is because I feel like in a lot of our episodes to this point, we've kind of been going with local roasteries and things that are not as accessible. So I wanted to pick something that more people can readily find. What I have chosen today is a Costa Rican Terrazu from Wegmans, the grocery store. This is a medium to medium dark roast, and it has some kind of buttery notes. I think you nailed it with kind of the oaky, fruity little bits of the flavor profile, Cork. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of throw a little bit of curveball. So grocery store coffee. This one is near and dear to my heart because this is one of the first coffees that I really genuinely enjoyed and sought out my second bag of when I first started getting into coffee. So maybe for some of you, that might be what gets you into it.
This week, we are talking about Vohar Voldaren Desecrator from Dominaria United. This is one of many blue and black or Dimir commanders that seem to combo very nicely with Isochron Scepter and Dramatic Reversal. But this one, out of the ones that I looked at, kind of felt like the most pushed and the most powerful to me. So this is the one that I kind of wanted to build with. Plus, when I was a casual, I loved Merfolk, so I'm going to play the Merfolk commander. So that's kind of where we're at for today. It's kind of similar notes to a lot of the commanders that exist in Blue-Black Dimir, but it's a new take on it, and that's kind of where I wanted to see where we could push the deck today.
Interestingly, this is an uncommon in Dominaria, one of like the 50 legendary things that got put into the set. And so this makes this Pauper EDH viable as well.
Also, like, the main reason I'm building it is because Stained Glass Showcase, and that's what I want, so that's what
Yeah, the Stained Glass Showcase is pretty sweet. I mean, I thought maybe because, which was surprising for me when I first saw this, I went, oh, that's a Doomsday Cracker.
That's spoilers for later.
I like how you can, with the Stained Glass, you can match the Jace Wincon.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I have my Stained Glass Jace and my Stained Glass Vohar, and we're good to go. To kind of read off Vohar, because he's new... Blue and a black, 1/2 legendary creature, Phyrexian Merfolk Wizard. So he did, in fact, get corrupted, completed, whatever you want to call it.
They're using that small font on the type line.
And he has two abilities. The first one is tap, draw a card, then discard a card. If you discard an instant or sorcery card this way, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life. There's your Dramatic Scepter combo, being able to repeatedly tap him to draw a card and then loop through your deck for whatever you need. And then for every incident sorcery you discard, they each opponent loses a life. So if you have 40 or plus in your deck, you win the game. Congratulations. His other ability, which is really cool and kind of synergizes with his looter effect, is 2 mana and sacrifice him. And then you may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard this turn. If the spell would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead. You can only activate this effect as a sorcery. So this ability is really interesting to me and harkens back to a previous commander that used to exist back in the day. It was kind of a powerhouse of EDH, or what CDH was before CDH became a thing, of Kess Dissonant Mage.
I thought you were going to say Drownu.
Nah, this is a Kess card. but close enough, Drownu is in contention there, I guess, as well. Being able to activate instants and sorceries, like, the easiest line that I can think of with this is, like, you know, cast Tainted Pact, naming Thassa's Oracle, grab Thassa's Oracle, then, you know, cast, or sacrifice Volnu to target your Tainted Pact, and then cast Thassa's Oracle, cast Tainted Pact, and you can kind of, like, double Tainted Pact for the Thoracle win off of your commander, which is kind of cool. So, it really makes some compact lines through there, which is really neat.
Volnu.
Well new. Oh, yeah. So basically the base of the deck list. As we expand on the list, you'll see as we go through here, kind of looking at some of the win cons. I mean, your primary bread and butter way to win, you're in blue black, is your winning, obviously, like we said, with the Thassa's Oracle, Jace, Wielder of Mysteries combo. There's nothing really new, fancy, or exciting going on there. It's clean, it's efficient, and it's just the best way that you can win the game. I do like I said when I was reading his effect, having the ability to kind of like loot away your graveyard and be able to ping the table down. If you're making 3 mana and one of them's blue, you can kind of filter through your deck, cast like a Time Twister, shuffle everything back in, and go back to drawing through it again, dealing, you know, enough damage to kill the table. So there's And it's life loss, so it doesn't target, which is neat. So there's enough neat stuff there too as well for the decklist, kind of like a backup win con. As Cork alluded to earlier, the two most exciting ways to get to there that I like to see is Doomsday and Intuition, being able to crack the piles with Doomsday and being able to cast the cards that they've been in their graveyard from Intuition, making it kind of irrelevant as to what card they pick. So that's my bread and butter. That's what I love to do. It's what I love to play. So that's kind of why we ended up with the commander we ended up with for today.
Yeah, there was no eluding. That was me just laying it on the table. And I'm just like, hey, here it is. This is what you're doing.
He's not wrong. That is what I'm doing.
With some of these other Doomsday crackers, I feel like the biggest negative against playing them is that it's a bit clunky to set up your commander and then cast your Doomsday. Just being very mana intensive for a lot of the previous lines that we've been looking at. What I like about Vohar is that 2 mana, 2 CMC, it really slots into many common play patterns. So I think that you can set up Doomsday really cleanly just in an average game as compared to a lot of the other like 4 or 5 mana Doomsday enablers.
It's super powerful. I mean, even like it's a loot versus something like, I tend to like look at this card and think of it like a Thrasios almost. I mean, it's a 1/2, not a 1/3, and it's blue and black over blue and green, and it's draw a card, discard a card, it's loot instead of just like try draw. But I mean, like, just being able to get out early, have a card advantage engine online that can play slow or fast depending on what you want to play around, it's just really cool. It's a really cool commander.
Being able to sculpt your hand without any further mana investment is something worthwhile.
Looking at the win cons, like I said, it's Thassa's Oracle, Jace, and then the backup plan is Vol kind of doing his thing. Not too much else there. The fun stuff for me is always how do we get there, and there's a lot of fun ways to do it. So we'll talk a lot about Doomsday piles and Intuition piles. I could talk about them for probably 3 hours, so I'm not gonna go too deep. I'll pull out some of my favorite ones potentially, and we'll go into those. But you're also a blue black deck, so you're clearly on things like Ad Nauseam and stuff like that to kind of go through the list and help power out fast wins through that line there. Everybody loves a good Nas. I know I'm not the only one out here, but big fan of that card.
I was going to mention Cypher. I think your deep dive is really interesting, but also it's worth mentioning that at its core, it's still like really good blue black cards, right? You have universal tutors and demonic tutor and other such things. So you can just have a Thoracle, right? You can just be Boharing your way to a simple Thoracle win that sees a lot of cards in an average game.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's easy.
I do like the fact too for Vohar that he is requiring only a colorless mana source. So like your like mana crypts and your soul rings and stuff like that, while insanely powerful, tend to like on the combo turn, like, you know, Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation is blue, blue, black. And if you're casting consultation twice, it's blue, blue, black, black, right? Your soul rings and stuff doesn't help that. But because they have an activated cost on Volhar, being the two colorless too is actually really powerful in the fact that like I can just use my crypt to pay for that ability. So it's in essence in some ways almost pseudo free in the fact that I'm not wasting my important colors to help cast the spell that I need to recast multiple times for my graveyard.
Yeah, your mana crypt is always a relevant card. It's always paying for something.
Yep. All right, so really getting through the deck list, like I said, there's I'm gonna talk mostly through you guys can always some niche choices. If you want to see the full list, obviously it'll be linked in the show notes below on our Moxfield profile. Check that out. We do keep an extensive library of every deck we talk about, as well as updates to them that we make throughout there. We're big fans of Moxfield. We're not sponsored by them, but absolutely love using their website. One of my favorite websites that has come out in a long time.
Yeah, not only that, like the dude is super chill too. Like he was actually at Punt City, which was awesome. Got to talk to him briefly. It was really awesome.
Yeah. So kind of just going through the list, I'm really testing the ability to utilize my graveyard as a resource. So an interesting cards that are in here are, you know, things like Snapcaster Mage, which is not typically seen in the CDH space, but being able to open up some additional intuition lines, as well as being basically a Volhar effect for blue mana from the hand is pretty neat. So it really lets me utilize some of the additional resources we'll talk about later, but currently a card I'm testing. I don't know if I love it yet, but definitely interesting into the line of what we're doing in the deck list. The deck is on some stacks pieces in the form of Opposition Agent and Notion Thief. They're just two really powerful effects. I do really like Notion Thief in here. It does add to a neat intuition line with Volhar, where you can intuition for like reanimate Notion Thief and Time Twister, and it really doesn't matter what they give you. As long as you have enough mana, you can combo out with that line. Probably a little fringe, but it's still a fun line to do. Nobody really sees it coming when you pull those three, and then you're like, yeah, no, I just get to Notion Wheel people.
With the overview of Volhar and like the uniqueness that you've been mentioning, Cypher, I think it's worth kind of coming back to reality every now and then. I thought we could talk about maybe a comparison or two to other similar decks. How do you feel so far in your testing that Volhar stacks up against something like Yuriko Doomsday or another dramatic Scepter outlet such as Toxrill, for example? Where would you put it against other similar decks in this color pairing?
I think Yuriko is a different beast altogether. Yuriko is way more in dealing with the combat step and trying to do different things. So I just think that's a vastly different take on the deck list. Whereas Yuriko is probably on like, you know, like 28 creatures or whatever number the Yuriko decks are up to now. I'm on like 4. I'm not really looking into doing that from there. I think the best, like for Toxrill, I think that's a close one. But I think Toxrill is just too expensive, right? Like my commander costs 2 mana. Theirs costs, what, 7? Like, so that's a big difference to kind of get going from there. So I like having Volhar at 2 because it lets me play, you know, more free interaction and more interactive pieces versus me just trying to power out a quick Toxrill. Volhar and Toxrill are completely different outside of the Scepter engine and having the Doomsday lines and the intuition lines that are a little different and a little easier to do with Volhar than they would be with something like a Toxrill.
Yeah, thanks for clearing that up. I feel like it's almost a meme at this point whenever Wizard prints another blue-black Scepter outlet into the format. So, yeah, it's interesting to see what this one does that sets it apart from the rest of the field.
Yeah, I think the closest one to looking at, oh man, the Scepter combo is something like a Kellis Fight Fixer. And, well, I think that deck is unique and kind of cool. I just don't think that it has the same abilities that that this deck has. I think it's a little harder to kind of get set up versus something like a like Volhar. So
see, I actually saw it as more of a parallel to Tazigar Scepter combo personally, with the way you're going to be interacting with the graveyard and whatnot.
A little bit. They're just two very different decks, because like your Tazigar Scepter combo is still kind of like a mid-rangey kind of control deck trying to do its thing. This deck is not. This deck is Doomsday combo. This deck is Intuition combo. It has some controlling elements to it, don't get me wrong, but you know, it's lower to the ground, it's a little faster, and it's just trying to, you know, set up different lines that those other decks can't feasibly do.
you're able to cut to the chase a bit more frequently.
Yeah, you're not relying on setup. You're just kind of casting your commander, and then once the turntable passes, you pretty much can win when you want. So it's really neat.
Sounds like it's more close to the Xur Doomsday lines than most anything else, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't like Xur Doomsday as much, though, but yeah, maybe. I haven't thought about Xur Doomsday in a while. I've just been on... When I think about Xur, I'm usually on like Shimmer or something like that, which is different, but yeah, could be. Kind of getting into the list and looking at what we have. I'm currently experimenting around with, you know, am I on Gush piles? Gush being a very powerful pile cracker in that you can for free draw two cards off of it by returning islands. Or do I want to go more into the consider route and look at that approach and see if that's more into where I want to be? Thought Scour is another card that kind of fits that same bill of stuff to be doing. So I'm still tweaking that and I'm still working on that, but there's definitely some power in the Doomsday lines that I've been pretty proud of and happy with. Intuition, again, being the other source of it that we've talked about a lot, being able to grab, like, you can do some fun piles where you can grab, like, the two Forbidden Tutors and, like, an Ad Nauseam, and it's like, you get to pick one, and then I get to do two of those things, so whatever you want to give me is fine. You know, if they don't even give you Nause, you can even just put the Nause in the bin, and then for seven mana, you know, five black, you can just, you know, cast Ad Nauseam and put it on the stack from your graveyard. So, or if they don't give you a tutor, you can just double tutor or whatever. The world's your oyster with this card in play and intuition. And the fact that it's not even a tap ability on that part is really critical to it. So you don't even need to kind of have it have haste and kind of go off from there, which is really cool. As I was building around it, I came across a couple of neat cards and interactions. So given that this is a graveyard strategy, when you first look at it, you'll notice that there's some weird graveyard cards in there. Things like Reanimate, which I talked about before with the Intuition line. Interesting cards like Shallow Grave and Animate Dead are both in play. The neat thing with those, and the reason that those are in there, is because the activated ability of Vohar is a sacrifice ability to allow you to cast an instant or sorcery. So there are lines where you can kind of just like activate him, get an instant or sorcery that you can cast this turn, and then kind of reanimate him, and then be able to do it again when you make copious amounts of mana in your mana pool. So there is some semblance there to reanimate it. And then knowingly, something like a Shallow Grave is really cool. It gives Vohar haste, so then he can also activate his tap ability when you bring him back and be able to use him to, you know, crack Doomsday piles or, you know, just draw an additional card if you need the card filtering your card selection. Kind of let you play a little faster of a game if the mana works out well there.
That's a really smart angle, because I was going to say one of the negatives of Vohar compared to other similar decks is that you do have Summoning Sickness as far as a dramatic scepter line is concerned. You do have the Snapcaster activation available anytime you want, but you normally do have to wait a turn cycle for his loot effect. That's a really heads-up play running the Shallow Grave to enable that if the cards fall in that favor.
Yeah, I can tell you there was a game that I tested where this exact line came into play. And again, this is best case scenario, but I got the Iso Scepter combo and I had the Shallow Grave in hand and I could make infinite mana, but I couldn't draw my deck. Well, I just cast Vohar, sacrificed him to target anything, and then Shallow Graved him back, and now my engine's online because now I have my loop going. So you don't have to slow roll it some of the times with cards like this that help you set up and facilitate that line thinking. So
because it feels so bad needing to compromise your 99 by running something like a Lightning, right?
Yep.
This one has more text in other situations as well.
So with the beauty of that also, which I don't think we mentioned at all, is that gives you an instant speed win. You could win over the top of somebody else with that.
As long as you have Isochron Scepter and Dramatic Reversal down, yes, you could win over top of somebody. If you set up Iso Scepter and then they silence you, which is a pretty common play that I see people do to stop you from being able to go off, then you just kind of go, all right, well, I untap, pass the turn, and then I'm gonna keep on keeping on from there. You have to have Vohar in play, but still, yeah, you can, in fact, kind of try and go over top of somebody. There's kind of some knowledge that it's happening there, but yeah, you can try and go over top potentially, especially with the old put the Thoracle in the bin play and Shallow Grave it back to you as well.
Yeah, that's more or less what I was talking about with the Shallow Grave being able to loot off of them. So,
and then the bonus text of Vohar, don't forget you can also be draining your opponents for life if you just have just a Dramatic Scepter without any mana positivity. As long as your mana neutral on your Scepter combo, you can straight up just kill people by looting through your deck with Vohar activations.
Yep. And that's the one of the other, it's like the backup one kind of the deck, right? Is you use things like Time Twister and Vohar, and which kind of lets you, you know, within a good number, kind of get through most of your deck, recycle your deck, and then just keep on going. The Time Twister is really cute. I found that with, currently we're on, you know, somewhere upwards of like 45 instants and sorceries right now, that you typically kind of have enough to kind of kill the table.
I think that's a really great overview.
So, Cypher, we've talked a lot about Doomsday. Why don't you give us an example of, like, one of the bread and butter Doomsday piles that you go to when, you know, all things are good? We won't go into the deeper ones when things are bad.
Yeah, not everyone has played a Doomsday line before, so I think it's just worth briefly mentioning what is the Doomsday package, because it's not just running the Doomsday. There are other deck-building concessions or boxes you have to put yourself inside to be able to win off a Doomsday.
I believe actually like an old pro back in the 90s actually wrote a book about Doomsday for how many like different iterations and piles and everything you can do. I'll double check that. And if I find it, I'll link it in the show notes. It's a very complex card that has a lot of piles. Over the years, we've kind of, there's the simplest and most efficient pile. The cleanest pile typically involves any draw two effect. The one that we've kind of harped on is something like a Gush, because it's relatively free. Again, you just bounce two islands and you don't care, you're winning the game, right? You can also supplement things like Frantic Search, Faithless Looting, Night's Whisper if you want to add some cards that actually require mana. You typically draw into a Lion's Eye Diamond and a Gitaxian Probe. You play the Lion's Eye Diamond, you cast the Probe, you crack the Diamond for triple blue, and then you draw your Thassa's Oracle with any card, doesn't matter what the card is, it could even be a Ham Sandwich, as the last card in your library, you cast the Thoracle, and there's the game. That's the basic cleanest line. It requires two islands and three black mana to win, the three black to cast the Doomsday, and then the two islands to bounce off of the Gush. It requires no other mana to kind of go off of it, so it's usually your most... your cheapest pile, right? I guess it requires two life too for the probe, but yeah, that's basically your cheapest pile there, and it plays out pretty straightforward.
And as far as resolving Doomsday is concerned, if you ever want to play a Doomsday commander yourself, a good resource is actually watching Legacy videos, because the Doomsday lines are, in most cases, the same thing compared to the commander lines. People run leagues with that all the time. It's a very viable deck in that format, so... yeah, if that's a part of your game that you'd like to brush up on, that's a good place to look.
Agreed. The only difference that I caution people on when they watch Doomsday and Legacy is Doomsday likes to use Edge of Autumn as another way to, as your pile cracker, because it's, you know, one in a green that has text, it doesn't matter, but it has cycling, sacrifice the land, so it's another free draw spell. Most of the good Doomsday decks in CDH are not green, so you don't have access to that card, but that's where your commander comes in to supplement, is the pile cracker, things like this deck, Yuriko we talked about, and different things like that that can just kind of cantrip you a card, kind of take the role of that. But other than that, your piles are pretty straightforward. You have things like Street Wraith you can utilize. Brainstorm piles exist, but they get a little convoluted because you got to put two back, you got to figure that out. And then there's obviously protected piles you can do. There's reanimation piles you can do with this deck list, where you can use things like Butt Scour to bin your Thassa's Oracle and then draw like a reanimate and then reanimate it. You can even double up with Vohar being able to like double Butt Scour you. So there's a lot of lines that the deck holds, but typically that's your bread and butter is get a multi-draw spell on the top of your library, get some fast mana and some more draw into there, and just kind of turn through those five cards, generating mana and drawing cards as you go until you can cast that, get that Thassa's Oracle and play and win the game.
We talked about Scepter, we talked about Doomsday piles. Now, one of the staples of our podcast we seem to always, you know, fall back on is intuition piles. You have it in here. What's, you know, your intuition pile? Is there a win the game intuition pile or what?
They're all win the game.
Win the game on the spot. Numb nuts.
What's actually funny is there's a pile in this deck with intuition that you get Doomsday with your pile. There's two piles you can get with Doomsday. That's pretty funny. You can get Doomsday, Demonic Consultation, and Painted Pact, and again, it doesn't matter, you win. Or you can get Doomsday, Demonic Consultation, Ad Nauseam. Again, doesn't matter. And then you can get Doomsday, Gush, Gitaxian Probe, and again, it doesn't matter what you get, because whatever you put into your bin, you get to you get to cast off of the off of Vorhar.
I feel like that's a lot of the win cons laid out. Thank you, Cypher. And with that knowledge of how we end the game, I think it's important to start with, well, the start. So let's go to opening hands and see how we get from point A to all the things that we just talked about. So I guess the question before we start looking at the hands themselves, is there a specific kind of thing that you're looking for, or are you looking for one of your combo pieces? Are you trying to find card selection? How much mana maybe are you looking for in your opening grip?
You're looking for your standard bread and butter mulligans. I think this deck mulligans pretty well. But you're just basically looking to, you know, get your mana online, get some tutors, get a card advantage engine or two if that's the game plan, or try and go for a fast combo. You're not restricted to go over a fast combo. Again, like having a bunch of counter spells and having the ability to have Vorhar sit and play and kind of loot for a while does give you some, you know, kind of redundancy to play a little bit of a longer game. So you do have that capability there. So you're not, you know, you're not hyper speed trying to go at 110. You can kind of play a little slower game if you want to, but you're really not interested in keeping, you know, relatively fair hands with this.
And with that, let's start our opening hands. Oh yeah, that was a smooth transition, just like today's coffee was.
And cut all of that out.
Do we want to talk about this hand actually? Because it's kind of poop.
You gotta do some poop hands.
All right, our first hand here is Clearwater Pathway, the blue-black flip land, cut down a new card from Dominaria United, which, if you don't know, it's destroy target creature with total power and toughness 5 or less for 1 black, Demonic Tutor, Wishclaw Talisman, Jataxian Probe, Dressdown, and Time Twister. I mean, right off the bat, I personally don't think this looks good, but I could be totally wrong, because I'm really bad at Doomsday.
You do get to gamble a little bit, which is cool, if you so choose, if you're really feeling the pressure to keep this hand, because you do get to take your draw step and cast the Gataxian Probe. So you get two draw steps to, well, three draw steps to find a second land. And then you can also see those draw steps before you decide what side of the flip land you're playing. Because if you find a blue source, then you get a Demonic Tutor, which might unlock enough stuff for this hand to be keepable. It just depends on how lucky you're feeling. What is our land count, Cypher?
I believe we're on 26 lands for this deck.
I am now less confident.
So, like, this hand's, like, really good if we draw literally Mana Crypt into Lion's Eye Diamond. That makes the hand crazy. But the odds of us drawing those two exact cards are not very high. So the hand's not very good. Cut Down's an interesting card. It is a new addition that I'm playtesting because it's new and I want to play it. It does kill like everything in CDH that is at all relevant. So I'm really excited to see how good this card ends up being if it's my Black Swords to Plowshares that I want it to be. We'll find out. But yeah, that's the exciting piece of this hand, is that I'm trying out Cut Down.
Our second hand, we went from very little lands to having all the lands. Spire of Industry, Watery Grave, Underground Sea, Verdant Catacombs, Polluted Delta, Swan Song, and Mission Briefing.
Two islands for Gush, Snapkeep.
This hand's pretty bad. pretty bad. I guess I missed it. Mission Briefing is another card I'm testing. It's another of the same effect to let me cast instants and sorceries from my graveyard. It also fuels his ability by with its Surveil too, by being able to put some extra cards into the graveyard there. So just another Snapcaster target. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't stay in the deck very long, but it's something I'm trying for right now, see how I like it.
It's a neat Doomsday Cracker.
It does do that. Also, this hand is pretty bad. So.
Oh yeah, 100%. We're going down to 6. Oh, this is a neat one. All right, so we're on 6 now. We have Mox Opal, Prismatic Vista, Mana Crypt, Clearwater Pathway again, Reanimate, Tainted Pact, and Fierce Guardianship.
This hand's fantastic. Like, it's actually really, really good because it's a little slow in the sense that you're casting Vorhar on 2, which I know sounds egregiously bad, but it's true. But you on turn 2, you have Vorhar up with Fierce Guardianship, and then if you get to untap, you just have a win because you can Tainted Pact
Into Tainted Pact again.
You can do two of Tainted Pact shenanigans and end of turn, like on the turn Tainted Pact, and then untap Tainted Pact and kind of just go for it. So there's some neat lines there that's available to you. So yeah, I would definitely keep the six. I'd probably been
reanimate, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's the mob symbol because you don't have Metalcraft.
Yeah, it's
Is Mohar an artifact creature?
No, he's not.
Okay, it's a Phyrexian, so I was like second guessing that, but
a good point. Yeah.
I still think you want to it's close. I think you want to keep the opal, because if it turns online, it just supports you so much better. And then reanimate's a card that's like good, but like you're not trying to like double Vohar with reanimate. Like, it's not really an impactful card in the matchup right now, because like with this Vohar, like I'm probably looking to put it back in the command zone when I sacrifice it. Not, I mean, obviously context of what I draw afterwards is fine and all, but like based off of this seven, I'm not looking to put it in the graveyard. I'm looking to put it back in the command zone to cast it later on. So I'm probably going to keep the opal. Because you also understand, like, I will have a loot effect as well. So being able to loot and get the opal online is actually really, really kind of critically important to what I want to be doing.
Yeah, I mean, as it stands right now, even with Mox Opal and Reanimate, this is a protected turn 3 win.
Kind of turn 4, but yeah.
It doesn't. Okay, hold on. We might.
You have to cast. You need 1, 2.
Three, oh, you four, have to five, actually six, cast it.
Seven, yep. Eight. You need 8 mana to win the game.
Yep. Okay, never mind. Then scratch everything that I just said. I thought you got to cast it for free.
No. You still pay the costs.
Worth mentioning that if you do draw any artifact that's castable off Mana Crypt, you can turn one commander.
Yes,
correct. That's the thing. Like if you draw like the Talisman, Felwar Stone, anything of the sort, you get to just kind of get your commander online turn one, and then you win on turn three because you chain impact with the Thoracle, draw your card, crack the Vohar, cast your Thoracle, do the fun dance.
That's a lot of live draws. I'm sold on the opal now.
Yeah, it just facilitates you better. So yeah, I would keep that.
Yeah, right. So after that keep of six, let's see our next seven. Turn one to Operation.
This is the blue-black good stuff hand.
So this hand we have here has a Mnemonic Betrayal, a Fierce Guardianship, a Snapcaster Mage, an Opposition Agent, a Cutdown, a Mana Crypt, and a Polluted Delta. Thoughts? Opinions?
This is like a solid 5. This is a terrible first 7. Like, you have turn 1, you have Crypt into turn 1 like Oppo, but like, unless you draw another land, you're not guaranteed to cast your commander, so your Fierce Guardianship is the full price of the you can, I mean, it's castable, but you have to pay full price for it. You can't cast Mnemonic Betrayal. Snapcaster is a 2-1 flash blocker in this deck, because you can't cut down and then flashback cut down with it, so like, this needs a lot to happen to be good, so you're really banking on that Oppo is solid. So
I think it is worth considering that your out is more than just drawing a land yourself. If any opponent cracks fetch, you get a land that way as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely that there too. So I guess why I said it was like a solid, like maybe 6 or 5 when you want to just play like Dimir good stuff. But like, I'm looking to do much better things than this technically in the opening game. So I would probably mulligan.
Yep, send it back.
So our second 7 here, it's a Cephalid Coliseum, an Urborg Tomb of Yawgmoth, a City of Brass, a Watery Grave, a Diabolic Intent, a Vampiric Tutor, and a Dothi Voidwalker. This one looks a little bit better as the second 7. I mean, personally, I think it might be a little bit of a trap, but you know.
It does on paper get there. The question is, does it get there well enough?
Or quick enough?
It's a tough hand. I mean, you have the tutors, which is nice. The intent being a sacrifice tutor is obviously not the best, but you do what you got to do. But having some extra lands is not a bad idea to kind of pitch to Vohar. This is definitely a slower hand for Vohar, where you're trying to kind of just grind a little bit. Second 7, I don't know if I'm in love with it. I could see somebody wanting to keep something like this, and I wouldn't fault you for keeping it, but I would probably want to look to see if I can get a better 6 than what I have here. You do have the setup where you can like turn 1 Vamp Tutor for something, turn 2 for like Tainted Pact, cast Vohar, and then try and like find a line to get there through land drops and stuff like that. Because then you get intuition and try to figure it out from there, or doomsday even. I'd probably end up trying something else.
No, I would definitely like pitch this. Let's see our next six. Cephalid Coliseum, a reanimate, an island, a mystic remora, an opposition agent, a deadly rollick, and a Thassa's Oracle.
Blue source, blue source. Dang.
Mm-hmm.
I could keep this. I don't think this is unreasonable to keep. You have two lands to feed your fish. It depends on where you are in seed order for this one, realistically. If I'm on the play, like I'm first seat, I wouldn't mind keeping this because I can go turn one land Mystic Remora. I have a draw step to draw a black source. I have a whole round of fish potentially. If they don't feed the fish, then that's great for me. I get to pay for it, play the Cephalid Coliseum. And again, I have another draw step potentially to draw black source. Go around the table and then, you know, keep on going through that motion there. Eventually it'll either get fed or again everybody will be developing in a slower light as well, and then I'd pay for it again so I can get up to two counters on the fish and then go from there.
It is a flexible hand. Once you start activating your commander to loot, it looks like you can be transitioning into a lot of different lines that your deck can do.
Yeah, having the and this is what I was hoping would come up in the hands. Having a loot effect with a Thassa's Oracle and a reanimate reduces the cost to win the game down from blue to just a black mana, which is kind of neat.
Even something simpler like discard opposition agent and reanimate. I mean, that could be a really good mid-rangey strategy if that's what your hand is looking like, if that's what the board state demands.
Correct. And yeah, Cork could be two black, but I mean, I just was saying, you can replace the double pips in blue for black, which is much easier thanks to Dark Rituals and Cabal Rituals than trying to get two islands, although this hand already has them, but yeah.
We have a distinct lack of black in this hand, but, you know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So yeah, I could keep this depending. If I was in fourth seat, it's still tough. Like, you could still probably keep it and try. You do let people develop a little earlier on in the game, but if they haven't developed more, like, it's still probably fine on six, because I believe we're on six. I was probably looking at either banning the Oppo or the Thoracle, depending on how I'm feeling today. I'd probably lean more on the Thoracle and keep the Oppo, so that would probably be my six. Would be Remora, Rollick, Oppo, Reanimate, and then the two lands.
Yeah, no, I agree. How about another one?
Well, that's just great.
I was about to say, is anyone going to say no to another one? That's definitely always another opener.
So this is like a turn one fish with Brainstorm and then turn two Rhystic Study?
Oh, I blinked. I thought the screen just didn't update on my end because I saw the fish on the right side.
No, this is card advantage dot hand. Actually, this is a turn one. This is a turn one Remora or a turn one Commander if I really wanted to, but...
Yeah. Are we not going to talk about it? Are we not going to read it off?
I mean, we could. I was just like, oh, that's really good.
All right. So as we gush about this hand, water your grave, snow covered island, normal island, because got to have that Tainted Pact mana base, Mox Diamond, Mystic Remora, Brainstorm, and Rhystic Study. I have an answer.
Okay. Do you, and maybe it's a personal preference, which island do you pitch to the Mox Diamond? Do you pitch the Snow Island or the regular island?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would pitch... I'd probably pitch the Snow Island.
No, let's pitch the regular island, because everybody plays Snow Islands with their extra planar lenses.
That's very EDH of you.
That's true. Like, someone's going to do it. Someone's going to bring it back. I mean, like, Chain of Veil Teferi just won a big event, right? So someone's got to be out there with an extra planar lens, just waiting to top table it.
Yeah, but CBT is still good, but that's for another day.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of irrelevant to what you pitch, but I like my Onslaught islands are the islands that I started playing Magic with, so that's probably the one I would want to see him play more.
But yeah, so this hand's great. You know, the hardest decision is probably do you want to turn one the fish or turn one your commander? I personally don't mind turn one-ing the fish and leaping up Brainstorm. That's kind of where my head's at. I don't know about you, Cypher. What are your thoughts on that one?
It depends on seed order, but I'm probably turn one-ing the fish. It really depends on what other people do. If other people lead on fish, like you can, or get an early cantrip like that, you can lead on your commander, because leading on your commander is never a bad thing, because your commander is also a card advantage engine in the command zone, right? So having the ability to do that. There's also a neat line because his hand has Brainstorm, which is, it's really funny that we got both, all we got Remora, Brainstorm, and Rhystic Study all in like the same like opening hand, because like each one, like each one is designed to be like one of them in there. Because with Brainstorm and your commander, you can Brainstorm, you know, put the two back, and then you can even loot one away later on with your commanders. You can kind of dig through, kind of soft anti-Brainstorm lock you too if you want to go down that road. If you're kind of stuck. So there's lots of neat interactions that it gives. But I would probably, with limited testing on the deck list, I would probably lead on Remora, but I could absolutely see why you would want to lead on your commander. And then follow it up with like a study, and then later on follow it up with a Remora later down the line when you kind of have like some already card advantage going and some mana development in play. Because you're 100% playing study on two, so kind of with that line of thinking, like there's actually a reason to want to play your commander.
Yeah.
I don't know. You want to do another one, or you just want to call hands?
One more hand. One more hand. One more hand. The crowd's chanting.
I don't want to upset them. Let's do another hand.
Yes, 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 yes. I like this one. I like this one a lot. All right. So our final seven here for this deck is going to be a Mental Misstep, a Misty Rainforest, a Springleaf Drum, a Lotus Petal, a Vampiric Tutor, a Thassa's Oracle, and a Mox Amber. I really like this hand.
Good mana and the Oracle combo and a Misstep.
A lot of mana, and you still leave up where you can Vamp Tutor, and you win on turn two.
Yep. The hand's really nuts. Turn one, Misty into Underground Sea, Petal.
Into your commander, into Mox Amber.
Into Springleaf Drum, pass the turn, into turn, tap the drum, and your commander, Vampiric Tutor, with Misstep back up for Missteps, for Tainted, whatever. Untap, 1, 2, 3. Thassa's Oracle, I believe. And Demonic Consultation combo costs 3 mana. You have it. Good game. Thank you. Play again.
Have a nice day.
The penultimate blue-black ride-or-die hand.
Oh yeah, anything they play to stop you stops you, but it is a turn 2 win with this deck with your commander, so any like, I mean, you're not going to draw any. I mean, if your top deck is like Fierce Guardianship, then it's like insane, but you really only have your top deck draw to add any type of extra protection to the hand, but still, like, I'm not going to ship this.
Yeah, no. I mean, I ship it with being the love of my life, but, you know, hey.
This hand really showcases the strength of Ohar being a 2-CMC commander. It enables the turn 1 Amber, the turn 1 Springleaf Drum, all those things that piece the rest of your hand together.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think with that one, let's go out big. Let's go out on top right there.
Yeah, so that's our deck tech guys on Vohar. He's a really exciting new commander from Dominaria United. I know there's a lot of other blue-black commanders that kind of all facilitate the same Scepter combo lines, but this is the one that I found the most exciting due to allowing me to play my favorite cards in Doomsday piles again. You know, I was a big Legacy player in Doomsday myself, and then I just love the card Intuition. I think it's an insane card, so being able to play that again... more decks to play that again. I play that already, but being able to play that in more decks is always cool and fun for me. So, with that, that's Vohar. What about you guys? What do you guys? Any closing thoughts? Wrap ups? What do we want to talk about here?
# gifts ungiven did nothing wrong.
Maybe someday.
Yeah, someday. I mean, I'd love gifts ungiven in this deck. You're gonna ban it for me.
No, I think we kind of like the whole episode. I've just been mentioning like the couple little bits of strength that I think Vohar has that other decks don't. It goes to show that even if it's really similar in the general strategy, there's a little bit of uniqueness still left in these blue-black commanders to look at.
I think it just really just speeds up the whole lines, all of the lines for you, being that your commander so has such a small CMC, kind of like how Roger allows you to have that extra level of protection, being that he costs 0, this one costs 2. You know, we take what we can get in blue-black.
So with that, guys, that's our show. We'll be doing a kind of a multi-series shows on the Dominaria United Commander. So this is the one of at least 3 that we're doing. I know Cork and Y are working on other commanders that they're going to talk about here from Dominaria United. So we're really excited for that. Any spoilers, guys? You guys want to give any spoilers to what's coming up, or you want to keep it in the vault till we hit the episode?
I'll just run through a list, right? I have a Joyer deck on the docket. The third CEDH viable one out there. So maybe Joyer Stacks, Joyer Combo, yet to be determined. There's options to go with that one, being like an Aether Vial in your command zone. Looking at Urte Resurrected for its two-headed giant potential. having an ETB that you can not only control your opponent's board, but target your teammate to give your partner a draw step is really interesting. And I think that's a design space that should be explored more. And for Popper, Tor Wauki the Younger being a red-black control deck. So maybe if we do a Popper episode, that might be something to visit.
I'm really fascinated with the Groll Urza deck, Miria. I really like her design space. I thoroughly enjoyed the idea of Urza. I just never could really get into Urza, but like I've always enjoyed Groll. So like when they were like, "Hey, here's Urza in your Groll," and I'm like, "My baby. This is it. This was made for me." And I literally woke up and I'm like, "Yep, gotta start doing it now." And I brewed up a deck. I playtested a couple of things, went, "I don't like this idea." And then I switched to another one and I'm still testing it right now.
Yep. And I actually tested Quark's list yesterday night as well. I put many, many permanents into play. I think the potential is there. And I think the last thing to determine is where it shakes out in terms of power level, because it might be a very strong deck. We're trying to figure out what packages are the best in this deck. And I think that if anyone can determine that, it's going to be you, Quark.
I do my best.
All right, everyone. So with that, that is another episode of Commander and Coffee Podcast. Thanks again for tuning in and listening. As always, you can find all of our links to all of our previous episodes, our social medias, the Moxfield link for this deck list, as well as our Moxfield library in the show notes below. Looking forward to seeing you guys again on next week's episode. So with that, I'm Cypher.
Cork.
And my name is Y, and I've been out of coffee since can number 3.
Same.
Peace out, guys.